This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Wood, your host, and we're happy to have you with us today on Peace Talk. You know, we've done a lot of programs on Peace Talk about hurting people and how hurting people have found the gospel at work in their lives. One of the groups of people that we've talked about a couple of times, because it's an area that's often overlooked, and that's the hurt that our pastors go through. That's the pain that many of them live with every day. And as pastors, they don't know where to go with it. They don't have anyone to talk to. And it's a destroyer of the happiness and the satisfaction of their ministry. In fact, many of them leave the ministry because of it. And that's what we want to talk about today. And as you're aware, this has been part of a group of programs that we're doing together on pastoral care because we believe it's a very important subject. And we have with us today Bob Burns, who approached this subject somewhat differently from the other guests that we've had discussing it. So, Bob, welcome to Peace Talk. And just get right into it, okay? Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then how did you and your fellow researchers go about discovering the needs of pastors?
Larry, maybe I could begin by just sharing a little bit about my background and how did I get into it. Something like the survival of pastors. I guess it begins by the fact that I myself have been involved in pastoral ministry since the early 1970s. And when I was on staff at Perimeter Church in Atlanta, Georgia, I was encouraged by the staff and the elders there to pursue a graduate program in adult education. And so I was able to do that at the University of Georgia, and in the midst of that was studying issues of education and continuing education and adults. And the topic I dealt with led itself towards the issues and concerns that pastors face in their day-to-day ministry activities. And then Covenant Theological Seminary received a grant from Lilly Endowment for $2 million to explore how to help pastors sustain in ministry. And they began looking around saying, who's crazy enough to come and try to put a program like this together? And we met together, and we began that program. And what happened was one of the activities we designed was called the Pastor Summit. And in the Pastor Summit, we actually invited a cohort of 10 pastors to meet together three times a year over a two-year period of time. And we actually had three of these cohorts going at the same time for 2 years, and then we had three more going for 2 more years, and then after that we had two more. So we actually ended up having 8 different cohorts of pastors who would meet together, and they would generally start by just saying, what are the concerns that you have? What are the things that you would like to talk about? Who would you like to talk with? And that morphed and grew into an understanding about the things that really burden them in their ministries, the thing that concerns them. And while we were meeting together, we would actually be audio taping these meetings. And then we had a team of people, about 4 or 5 people, who would actually go through these audio tapes and type them up and then read them. And I was one of those people. And we'd read them and we looked for ideas and themes that kept coming back again and again. And out of that research, we began to identify key elements that pastors grappled with on a daily and weekly basis. And those boiled down into 5 primary themes of pastoral resilience.
And let's put this out right here. I became aware of this because you have just released a brand new book. It just hit the bookstores just recently, called Resilient Ministry, where you and your fellow researchers have put down much of what you learned, and much of it in direct quotes from the pastors themselves.
Right. And the 5 themes that we identified the pastors experiencing, the first was their need to focus on their own personal spiritual formation. The second one was for them to be aware of and sensitive to their own self-care. The third area was to be attuned to the issues of emotional and cultural intelligence. The fourth thing was to become more sensitive to and in touch with the concerns of marriage and family issues. And then the final one was issues of leadership and management. Now, the thing, Larry, that you might be surprised in is some of those things don't sound like typical pastor's work, like it's not talking about preaching or designing worship services or visitation of people in the hospital or things like that. But these 5 areas stood out among all the pastors as some of the primary things that would bring them down in the ministry if they weren't attuned to it.
Now, are these items that you mentioned, are these things that the pastors were all aware of themselves, but they discovered them, they became aware of them as they met together and as they discussed these things together?
That's exactly right. The pastors really weren't necessarily cognitively aware of these things. You know, author put it this way once: professionals know what they know, but they don't know what they know what they know. And what I mean by that is that the pastors intuitively understood the things they grappled with, but they'd never named them before. And so what we were involved in doing is simply naming the realities that they were feeling and experiencing from a week-to-week basis.
Well, if you understand it, but you just can't name it, then how does naming it really help you?
Well, because when you name the issue, you can begin to address it objectively. It isn't just something which is a hidden thing lurking kind of behind your back, bringing you down. It's something which you are suddenly aware of in a clear way. And especially when pastors began to realize that they weren't the only ones in the room that were dealing with these things, that there's a whole group of people who are facing the same things. And interestingly enough, Larry, as I go and talk with pastors and share these things with them, I have never met a pastor who doesn't say, "Oh, those don't apply to me." Everyone that I've talked to over the years has said, "That is right where I'm living."
Well, answer this question then. If you can get 10 pastors together and ultimately had 80 pastors that you ran through your cohorts and these studies over 2 years, and yet they were sensing things but not aware of them, how did they get through seminary? How did they get through pastoral ministry and doing these things and be more or less unaware of these things?
Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, theological seminary is a wonderful place to do what we might call pre-professional training. And that is you learn, if you think about a person who's digging a ditch, the person learns the dynamics of the shovel, but they never really put the shovel into the ground and start moving dirt. Often, theological seminary is a time to understand the tools that you're going to be using, but you're never really involved in the day-to-day work of the ministry, the trenches, as it were. And if you are, you're only getting a taste of it on an occasional basis. You're not caught up in the day-to-day grind. And what happens is then pastors go into the ministry, and what we discovered is the ministry is a 24/7, 365 job. And what I mean by that is a pastor is always involved in living the work that they're doing. Who they are is what they do. And they are so absorbed in it. Another person said, you know, the ministry is an all-absorbing, all-encompassing experience. And ministers generally have between 2 to 5 key things that they're having to work on at any point in time. And the fact is that they are running and gunning so fast that they rarely ever take time to reflect upon their experience until something happens to them that's a crisis or a problem in their own family or in their own life. And that at that time, they crash. What happened in our cohorts, Larry, is instead of having to create a crash experience, we pulled aside for 3 days at a time, slowed them down, and had them do some reflection on their lives. And then we bring their spouses in and have their spouses speak into that. And suddenly, away from the day-to-day pressures and anxieties, they began to see these things more clearly.
And how did that impact their lives? I mean, having seen them more clearly, how were they able, or were they able, to actually translate what they were learning in those cohorts into how they actually did in approach ministry?
You know, Larry, I would be lying to you if I said that all the pastors who went through the pastor summits' lives were totally changed, and nothing ever, you know, they were totally, completely changed, 180-degree turn. What we discovered is that learning these things, the pastors began a new process. They began to slowly take steps towards greater personal health. And what we identified is, and we embraced together, is the fact that this is really a journey of learning together. This is not arriving at a destination of saying, we finally made it, we've got our act together, life is going beautifully, But our lives, we're seeking to understand these issues, and we're seeking to process them so that it might mean that suddenly, for example, I'm beginning to take a day off during the week. And for the first time in my ministry life, I'm actually taking a day off. Does that mean I don't get tempted to go back and do the work? No, it happens to everybody. But to seek to begin to take baby steps one day at a time to bring change into our lives is a difference it makes. And you know what's interesting, Larry, is after I was finished with the bulk of this research, I myself went back into pastoral ministry, and I'm in doing that today, and I'm in the same place that these other pastors were. I am trying to put into practice the things which we learned, and I find the pressures are on me to not take time away, to not be concerned about self-care, to not take time to be together with my wife and my family. All those pressures that they feel, I feel myself, and I'm seeking to try to put them into practice as well.
I thought that was one of the sad things about reading through Resilient Ministry is that many of these pastors, after having been exposed to this, went back into structures that were totally unaware of what the pastor was going through, and that they were finding change very, very difficult, because after all, if you're going to take a week off, what if your board says to you, or you've got angry members who already think you're taking too much time off?
That's exactly right. A number of things you just said, Larry, in that comment. The first is that the if you think of the church like a big family, and you go away on a vacation and you come back and you say, I'm going to do things differently, but then you get back into the routine of the family activities and you find yourself slipping right back into the kinds of things you were doing before. The pressures that the people in the church expect of you are still there. And when you walk back in with the knowledge of what it takes to develop a resilient ministry, it doesn't mean that the people in the church are going to say, well, Pastor, we're so glad you're doing this. No, they're going to continue to have the same expectations that you've had all along. That's one of the very reasons why we've encouraged pastors to give this book to members of their board and to other key laypersons in their church to begin helping the whole church evaluate their expectations of the pastors and to consider what it would take for our pastor to live a healthy life and to have a healthy ministry.
Well, we're at the end of the first part of the program, Bob. We're going to come back in just a minute, and I want to talk about, since I think you just raised the subject, that this issue is in many cases a failure of a community and the need for a community to come together around the pastors. So we'll talk about that when we get back. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
There's a bipartisan movement to basically bail out state governments by making online retailers, instead of the consumer, collect the sales tax. This is something that 5-10 years ago would have been unheard of. Today, the country's over the tipping point. And now, tax internet sales, go right ahead. What the heck? It's only fair. Well, no, it's not fair. And it's not constitutional.
Jason Lewis, Saturday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Christian Talk 660.
Hi, this is Joe Mantegna. Every time my Uncle Willie tells me about his service in Patton's Third Army in World War II, I'm reminded of what we owe the U.S. Army. 14 generations of American soldiers who have courageously defended our nation. Their stories represent the best of America and should never be forgotten. Join me to help build the National Museum of the United States Army, a long overdue tribute to all American soldiers. To learn more, visit armyhistory.org.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, at peacetalk.com you can access relationship-restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Wood, your host. Glad to have you with us. If you stuck with us through the break, glad to have you. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Bob Burns, one of the co-authors of a brand new book called Resilient Ministry. And Bob's telling of a study that he and his fellow researchers did with nearly 80 pastors over several years, delving into the issues of the pastorate and how pastors can not only survive but thrive. Their findings were interesting. So let's pick it up, Bob, where we left it off. We were talking about the idea of community. First of all, that the pastor tends to isolate from the community. Is that true?
Well, yes, it is, and yet that's going to be a surprise to many of your listeners, because they think of the pastor as very integrated in the church community and very involved. And in one sense, the pastor is that involved. However, in another sense, the pastor is very lonely and isolated. You say, well, how can that be? Very simply this, Larry. One author talks about the fact that leaders have both confidants and allies. And an ally is someone with whom you hold a great deal in common. You work shoulder to shoulder in various things. You're committed together. You do things together. They can be very good friends. But with allies, there are always things which you can't share with them, things that you can't disclose to them. Whereas a confidant is a person that you can be a totally open book to, that you can share yourself completely. And you say to me, well, you know, doesn't a pastor have a lot of confidants in the church? Actually, the pastor rarely can find a person in the church that they can share themselves with without any fear of concern that the things that they share might come back to harm them. Let me give you an example. One pastor in our study said, you think I'm going to go into a Bible study and share with those guys that I'm sick and tired of being in this church and I want to leave? Another pastor said, imagine what it's like to go and lead a Bible study with somebody who is on your board and challenging them about an issue in their life when they are going to go into the board meeting that evening and determine what your salary is going to be. These kinds of things are what we call dual relationships. That means in the relationship you have more than one area of interest together. You have multiple areas that you're involved with that can be conflicting with each other. And so pastors consciously and unconsciously are always aware of who they're talking to and what they can or cannot say to that person. Now, because of that, these people they're dealing with are allies, but they're always on guard, again, consciously or unconsciously. What they need are people they can talk to with a freedom without any sense of reprisal. Well, you know who that is in their life? More often than not, the primary confidant that the pastor has is their spouse. We came to call the spouse in a ministry marriage the nuclear dumping ground, because that's the one place the pastor can go and dump their load on their spouse. Now, here, this then comes into another one of our themes, and that's the theme of marriage and family. Where then does the spouse go to take their burdens that they've gotten from their pastor, husband, or wife? Where do they go to process their pain? And what we discovered is if the pastor is lonely, the pastor's wife is even lonelier, because that spouse has no place to go to process. We had multiple stories where the pastor had a conflict with a person in their church. Over a period of weeks, they would go back and resolve that conflict with them. But at the same time, they had actually initially dumped their load of pain on their spouse. The spouse hasn't gone back to that person with their pastor, with the pastor, to process the pain. So the pastor comes home and says, guess what, honey? I've solved the problem with Joe. And the wife, consciously or again unconsciously, may say, well, maybe you have, but I'm still carrying that stuff. And so you see the challenge that the pastor has. And we spent a great deal of time saying, where can pastors and where can their spouses go to find safe relationships that they can trust, where they can be open and talk about the things that they're going through?
Didn't you find, though, the marriage part to be a double-edged sword? Because you just, one problem, if the pastor goes and actually shares these things, it leaves the wife carrying a burden. But if he doesn't share, the wife has ended up left out, and that crisis comes in the marriage because the pastor's not talking with his wife. He's not spending time with her.
That often is the case. It's interesting that it depends upon the way the relationship is in the marriage. And, of course, every marital relationship, as you know, has their own unique contours and dynamics to them. Some pastors can go to their spouse and say, you know, there are things I can't talk to you about, and that spouse is very comfortable with that. Other spouses have a very difficult time with that. And what we've often found is it's important to make sure that that base conversation happens in the marriage, where they can actually talk about what they can talk about. And every marriage has its own set of boundaries and rules in those areas. You know, I have a number of friends who are professional counselors, and they find the same kind of challenge in their marriages, where they are not allowed to go home and talk about the cases that they're dealing with. But the fact is the wife of a counselor doesn't go to church on Sunday and hang out with the very people that their husband has been dealing with. So you have these interpersonal dynamics that are happening, and this is why we often find that it's important for pastors to find these safe places that they can go to and for their spouses to come as well and talk through these issues. Sometimes that safe place is going to a counselor. Sometimes that safe place is going to a retired pastor who may be in the community. That safe place may be someone who is a pastor that they know who lives in another town. It could be a friend of theirs that they knew when they were in graduate school. But wherever however they can find it, they need to go find these places where it's safe and they can process their issues.
So your advice to any pastor that might be listening is, if you don't have that confidence, there's a high degree of probability that you're having difficulty surviving and thriving in your ministry because you have no one to talk to.
Either that, or you become a liar to yourself. You just push down the pain and don't deal with it and just keep on pressing on. And that pain is going to come back, and it's going to get you at some time or another.
You know, this interview that we're doing now about your book, Resilient Ministry, we've also talked to Paul David Tripp about his book, Dangerous Calling, in which he talks about these identical things, only he talks about it from his personal experience. And now you come along and say, well, we actually did research with 80 pastors, and we find exactly these same things. We must be hitting on something that must be true.
I definitely think that these are hidden secrets that have been going on for decades in the lives of pastors. And the interesting thing is Paul has been able to get enough space in his own life and experience where he's been able to reflect upon these things. And it's really confirming. You know, I finished writing the book and had turned the manuscript in before Paul's book came out. And to be able to read through Paul's book and to say, this is such on the one hand, this is so confirming. On the other hand, this says, you know, we have a lot of work to be done, and I think that work begins on the level in the local church by just having people in the congregation read some of these books. For example, the very first chapter in the book Resilient Ministry that we've written is basically an expose of what's it like to be in the ministry. If a person would just read that first chapter and then read the last chapter of our book, which summarizes our findings, I think their eyes would be open in some amazing ways to the things that their pastor goes through. That in that way, they would have some concrete things to pray for their pastor that, like we said, their pastor may not even be aware of right now. Of course, another thing that would be important for the pastor to do when they begin to become aware of these things is to begin talking about that. They can talk about this on a board level. As a matter of fact, one of the things we put in an appendix in our book is actually questions that a board can use in their annual review with their pastor to talk about how the pastor is doing, how the pastor is coping and surviving. You know, usually pastors don't have annual reviews, and if they do, the annual review focuses around the number of people who are coming to the church, the state of the finances in the church, or the programs that they're seeking to promote in the church. But rarely, if ever, is the annual review a time to talk about how the pastor is actually doing in the ministry.
That question, when I'm sitting here, the way I'm hearing you, and you don't talk about this in your book, but it's all over the book, is that before there's going to be change, there are going to have to be some people like pastors and boards who really begin to take some risk about talking about some things that are, in fact, hidden subjects that people don't want to talk about.
Yeah, and they don't want to talk about it either because they're not aware or because it's threatening. And the awareness part of it we've already talked about, and that is getting your hands on a book, seeing where things are named and dealing with it. But the threat part comes with, for example, a pastor in our group who said, if I share these things that I'm going through with people in my congregation, they're not going to want to follow me anymore. They're not going to be able to respect me. If they knew the kinds of things I struggle with, they're not going to respect me. Now, between you and me, Larry, I believe that's, as my friend Steve Brown once said, that smells like smoke because it comes from the pit of hell. We want to hide our weaknesses. And yet the Apostle Paul himself in 2 Corinthians 10 and 2 Corinthians 12 talks about the weaknesses and the struggles that he dealt with. But there is a great fear because our culture wants our leaders to be heroes. Our culture wants to see our pastors and our leaders as people who don't have a problem. And as one pastor in our study said, lots of times people want me to preach about a Jesus by saying, come to Jesus and be like me, somebody who doesn't even need Jesus.
So what you see here, and I think what we're coming to, is a recognition that our pastors have real problems that make them dysfunctional, which creates dysfunctional churches, which makes it very, very difficult to even address these issues and see change.
And how do you correct dysfunction? You begin first by naming the reality and then not expecting to come to a place of perfection, but beginning to take steps towards what we call gospel health. And that means on a day-to-day basis, begin to work on those five areas: my spiritual formation, my walk with Christ, which is separate from what I'm doing in my ministry, my own self-care, because if I'm learning how to take care of myself, I'll be better prepared to last for a lifetime in ministry, my cultural and emotional intelligence, awareness of what's going on inside of me and what's going on inside of others, my marriage and family, what's happening inside of my wife, what's going on with my kids and how they're being impacted by the ministry, and then by exploring what does it mean to lead and to manage in the church and how to begin developing healthy, proper boundaries in that work.
Our guest today is Bob Burns, one of the co-authors of a brand new book called Resilient Ministry. If you've been struck by this conversation and if you wonder how it might be affecting your pastor in your church, go get a copy of the book, Resilient Ministry. As Bob said, read the first chapter and the last chapter, and it'll open your eyes in ways that can lead to saving and rescuing your pastor and rescuing your church. The book is Resilient Ministry. Get a copy today. This has been Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.